Well, hey, everyone. Welcome to yet another episode of Events with Benefits. Our podcast is designed to help nonprofit organizations like yours raise more money and achieve greater success at your fundraising events. Also, well, part of our mission here is to get your stress level down. We want to keep you in touch with what's going on out there in the world of fundraising. Things are changing very quickly. Each episode is brought to you by three sponsors. Myself, Danny Hooper. I'm a certified benefit auctioneer, also the author of a best-selling book called Easy Money, How to Generate Record Profits at Your Next Fundraising Auction Event, and I hope you'll check it out at Amazon. You can just search Danny Hooper for the book or go to DannyHooper.com. Also, Renee Zhao joins us here. She's the founder of Donation Match, another one of the sponsors of this program. And Donation Match, based down in San Diego, is your one-stop shop for event donations and what they call give-back opportunities. Donation Match, what they do is they connect your cause with local and national companies that are willing to donate products and services at your fundraising event. Very cool idea, very cool company, and you can check them out, sign up for free on donationmatch.com. Finally, Ian Loth is with us here today, the Vice President of Fundraising for Winspire, our third sponsor here on Events with Benefits. And Winspire is a really cool company, also based in Southern California, but what they do is they provide unique, one-of-a-kind consignment travel packages. We're talking your trips to Italy, to New Orleans, to destinations all around the world, Napa Valley, trips like this for your fundraising event, and their packages always include airfare, hotels, and everything else. And they come at no risk. You don't pay a penny to Winspire until the package is sold at your auction and you've already made your money. So you can go to winspireme.com to learn more. And today, we've got an outstanding guest on the show. We've been waiting for a long, long time to get Kathy Kingston to join us. Kathy Kingston is a fundraising auction strategist. She's a professional auctioneer and a friend of all of ours. And Renee Zhao from Donation Match, I thought it was a great interview. She's a smart lady.
Oh, yeah. We've been trying to get Kathy on ever since we started this podcast from day one. So I'm really excited that she was finally able to fit our schedule. We were able to fit hers. We got her in. She's not only just a fabulous strategist, she's also the author of a book called Higher Bid that we can all, this is another one of those must-haves before you do your event.
Ian?
Yeah, absolutely. Kathy Kingston's a household name for most fundraisers. I know that she was, one of the first people that I started looking to when I was first on the scene and came here doing, writing blog posts for Winspire. So it's just an honor to have her as a guest here and start to share some of her information that she has locked up in that brain of hers. But she's been, administering a ton of classes across the nation in addition to all the events that she's doing. And so she has a very good pulse on the changes and the trends and things that have been kind of evolving with the benefit auction industry. So lots that we talked about here today, and really excited to share with you all.
And on that note, let's enjoy our conversation with Kathy Kingston. Well, she's without doubt probably the hardest working, certainly one of the hardest working people in the world of fundraising auctions and just fundraising events in general. Kathy Kingston joins us today, a fundraising auction strategist and professional auctioneer. And Kathy, just great to have you with us here on Events with Benefits. And you, I'm sure, will be happy to know that we have had a number of requests from nonprofit organizations to get you on as a guest. You are highly respected for your deep well of knowledge. You've been doing this for a long, long time. Not only that, but you're the author of a best-selling book called A Higher Bid, which people can get on Amazon. And I know this thing has been selling like hotcakes for you, and rightfully so. I've heard it referred to as the Bible of fundraising books. So we're really happy to have you here, and no doubt our listeners are going to have a lot of questions that I hope I'll be able to channel and have you deal with. First of all, let's just get a little bit of your background.
Well, hi, thanks, Danny, and thanks to everyone who put this call together, and I'm just delighted to be with you today.
And you today actually are sitting in a beautiful hotel room getting ready for an event tonight. You're up in Northern California. What are you in the state for?
Well, I'm actually here. A lot of my work now is really working on deep fundraising strategies to help nonprofits really hit that next level. And so today I'm actually in the Silicon Valley. I'm working with the Silicon Valley Wine Auction, the board and the beneficiaries. And, of course, it's put on by the amazing Santa Cruz Mountain Wine Growers Association. And tomorrow I'm actually going to be working with them on some of these strategies I'm going to share with you on the call.
Good. So, well, let's just step back into your background. Did you come into the business as a fundraising auctioneer? At what point did you kind of transition over more to the consulting side?
Well, actually, you know, I'm doing both auctioneering and consulting, but my background is very interesting. I have an undergraduate degree in biology and environmental science and a master's in education. And I worked, you know, also as a Division I volleyball coach at St. Louis University, and I spent some great years up in the north, a little north of you, Danny. I was up in Alaska for 10 years and did a lot of work with nonprofits up there, and actually had a stint in the entertainment industry. But, you know, for the last, you know, 3 decades, I've also been an auctioneer, so which I am full-time now. But, you know, it's a funny story how I got into the auction business. You know, my parents were antique dealers, and my grandfather was a farmer, and so I've been to lots of auctions and never had really thought about it for myself. But, you know, when I was living in St. Louis and, you know, working at St. Louis University, we would go to, you know, the country auctions for fun. All my friends would go because they wanted to buy something, and I went because the church ladies had their great peach pie, and I wanted to get some of that. So, you know, one day I was sitting at an auction, and I bought a little clock. And I went to pay for it, and I came back to my seat, and there was a little receipt that said, to reorder this form, call the Missouri Auction School. And it was like a lightning bolt went right through my heart, and I said, I'm going to be an auctioneer. It was magic like that. And so I couldn't wait to call the Missouri Auction School and sign up, and that was back in 1986. And I went to school thinking that I was going to sell antiques and collectibles and art. And I did a couple of those auctions, and I ran out of vacation at my university job because there was so much pre-work. And I found that my heart was really in the fundraising. So I only did a couple of antique auctions way, way back when. And because I've been raising money since I've been literally 8 years old for great causes. And so that's how I really came to be an auctioneer. And, of course, as you know, being a member of the National Auctioneers Association and all the great education and networking they have, you know, I've been able to really, you know, expand my own education and also, you know, to teach and help others. So, you know, I kind of came into this as a first-generation auctioneer. I know many, many auctioneers are born into an auction family, and I kind of like to say I was born into the National Auctioneers Association family as a first-generation auctioneer.
At what point in your career did you get to that moment when you said, I'm ready to sit down and write a book, that I have enough knowledge now to do it? And what motivated you to take on that task? Because having written a book that is a fraction of the size of the one that you wrote, I know how much work that is. And just talk about that.
Sure. My motivation to write the book was probably a couple, you know, thinking about it for a couple years before I wrote it, knowing that, you know, actually it was around, you know, the time of when the Great Recession hit. And many of my clients, I'm sure many of your folks around the country, was like, now what? You know, what can we do? And when many groups were, you know, in retrenchment, I poured my own resources and energy and thinking into how can I elevate the profession. That was my whole goal. It's like, how do I help raise the bar for nonprofits and schools, but also other auctioneers? And I knew that then I wanted to put something out that could be a great guide for everyone for a long time to come. But I didn't want to write a book, honestly, that was another how-to. I really wanted to offer a couple of very important ideas. And I know as an auctioneer, and many people listening on this podcast are going to go, oh, when I say this, but I'm going to say it. I think everyone should stop doing auctions. Stop doing events. Instead, concentrate and start doing real philanthropy. Engaging donors, maximizing fundraising, and making sure that you improve the guest experience. Because when that happens, that's when you can really raise exponential money. So it's really a mindset shift.
Okay, so you're not literally saying don't have an auction. You're just saying let's not just make that the sole focus. Let's start to think in broader terms.
That's right. And I said that to kind of have everybody go, whoa.
Yeah, you got my attention. I thought this was going to be a short interview.
No, honestly, because, you know, I have to say this just as plain as I can. Most people make the unknown mistake. They're shooting themselves in the foot before they even open the doors to the event because their philosophy, their thinking, their structure of how you conceptualize an event, how you design it, and how you conduct it, and how you follow up on the event is based on an old model that doesn't work anymore. That model is like what I call the event-centered model. It's all about the logistics, the party, all of that stuff, and fundraising is an afterthought. Many people come in and say, you know, they're thinking about the things that really don't matter. As opposed to a philosophy, which I call, you know, the philanthropy model of fundraising auctions, where you focus on the donor first and the fundraising, you know. So you're not operating in a silo. And if we were here, I teach a lot of classes, as you do, Danny. And, you know, if I was here, and I'm an old coach, I like to have a whiteboard. I'm always diagramming things. And so if you thought about the old, outdated model that doesn't work, the event model, it's a blip on a graph. You do some planning, you have an event, and pop, and that's it. Wouldn't it be great to integrate your event, position your event, let it be a catalyst as part of your entire annual fundraising and development program? And that's why I wrote my book.
Very good. Now, let's just talk about some of the trends that you're seeing out there right now, because you're paying such close attention, Kathy. I think we're all in agreement. We are in a time of sweeping and massive change on every front, politically, socially, culturally, and it's got a lot of people freaked out. And I know it's got a lot of my clients freaked out, wondering, what do we do? Things are shifting so fast here, and you know, we're wondering if our event is still relevant. We're wondering if our organization is still relevant. What are your words of console and advice to this type of thinking?
I have to tell you, I'm actually excited to tell you about the next idea. And that idea is stay close to your donors. No matter what happens, you know, in this challenging, complex fundraising environment, this economic environment, the most important thing is to stay close to your donors. And in our world, in the fundraising auction, the gala, the event world, everyone is a donor. Everyone is a donor. And let me share some exciting things. Number one, last year was the highest level of giving in the history of giving. And so, you know, donors are giving at the highest rate ever. Giving is up. However, how people are giving is different now. Instead of giving to lots and lots of organizations, we're finding that people are giving, but they're giving to fewer organizations. So let's translate that and what that means in a fundraising auction. That means that we, together, have an amazing opportunity to have our guests fall in love with us in that wonderful time between when the doors open and when they're driving home in their car. So that puts the responsibility on us, Danny, you and I as fundraising auctioneers, and everyone listening as auctioneers, and all the nonprofits and schools and wonderful charitable organizations around the world. That means we have a much stronger, I would say, commitment to helping our guests at the event understand the impact of their bidding in the silent and live auction, about their generous gifts and fund a need, and other ways that they participate. So that means instead of having the basic old boring auction, blah, 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 let's really focus first and foremost on connecting our donors to our mission. You know, I have to tell a little story, if I might.
Yeah.
Just working with a group this morning. They're having their 75th anniversary gala.
Wow.
It's, you know, what an amazing opportunity. And one of the questions that came up is a very initial meeting and said, you know, well, should we have a celebrity there? What do you think? And I said, your celebrity is called number 75. Your celebrity is the fact that you have this amazing gift to the community. You don't need a celebrity. What you need are stories that connect people to the legacy of the past and to the opportunities of the future. If you have a celebrity at any event, think about what message that sends to your donors and to your guests and your supporters and your sponsors and volunteers. And who's going to come? Are they going to come because of the celebrity and not because of your cause? So just a little mini example of that. So it's about connecting to donors. In fact, my newsletter comes out tomorrow. If anybody wants to get on my mailing list, if you don't mind, you can go to howtoraisemoremoney.com, howtoraisemoremoney.com. That will put you on my mailing list. And I have a whole series of articles coming out this year that I'm really going to focus on the donor, because I think this is the most important thing that anyone who's putting on a fundraising event or auction can do, is design first to be an opportunity to attract new donors and to engage the current donors and supporters that you have now.
All right, very good. And what are some of your strategies or techniques that you recommend organizations follow to do that, to attract new donors and further engage the existing donors?
I would say something very simple that almost everyone does not do right now. Create an audience development team. You know, I always ask this question when I'm teaching a seminar. Say, okay, how many people have a committee to, you know, procure auction items? 100% of hands go up. How many people have a committee to get the right people in the room? You might have one hand out of 100, maybe. So I would say intend to focus on audience development. And that means a combination of table host, individual donor strategies, sponsorship strategies, working with honorees, and working with related, you know, groups. I call them super connectors. And those are the folks that are related to you, but you probably forgot about them, the people that are doing research about your group. They're doing law. They're doing health care. They might be a feeder school. They might be, you know, into the school. They might be something you do work-study placement if you're in the education group. Those are the main core. And I would have a strategy that focuses on that. And when you have guests who are personally invited, you know, every chair is precious. It's no longer valuable anymore just to fill the room. You want to fill the room with people who love your cause and are personally invited by someone who also cares about the cause. And that's where the magic happens.
Yeah, that's the way it's an atrocity, really, when we look at things like table sales and the company owner buys the table and takes the tickets and puts them back in the coffee room for the staff to pick up on Friday afternoon if they want to go out for a night out. I know we've all got lots of horror stories. Anybody that is a fundraising or benefit auctioneer, Kathy, you'd have a bunch of them. But, you know, I did one recently, and it was a dental event, lots of dentists there. And just about all the folks that they had given these tickets to from their dental offices sat there on their phones just texting, you know, away all night, not paying any attention to anything. And that's just a real heartbreaker when the organization invests so much time and hard dollars in putting on these events. So what are some of your hard recommendations then to make sure that we get the right bums in those chairs?
Well, I tell you what, you know, just starting with the sponsorships, I would say that we want to change the name of corporate sponsorship or sponsorships to sponsor leaders. We want to attract and retain sponsor leaders. And the only way this can happen is with the organizations to take the bull by the horns, literally, as they say up in Calgary, right?
That's right.
It's the onus of responsibility is on the nonprofit, because sponsors don't know any better. And they need to say, Mr. and Mrs. Sponsor, we want you to become a leader for us. We would like you to hand-select guests long before our event who can be generous in our live auction, our fundraising activities in the room. We want to make sure that we leverage your gift so that we can raise more money. Please do not use this event as your employee picnic.
Yeah. Good point. Well, that's one of the things, too, listeners to keep in mind that, you know, with your lead sponsors, you're not just going after their dollars. What's just as valuable, even more valuable, is their connections, right?
Exactly.
Their
and
network.
You want them to, yeah. And, you know, one of the, my secrets, you know, it's no secret because, you know, I say it all the time, but one of the biggest values you can have is go to your vendors. You know, whether you're looking within your organization as like, who can we invite, go to your accounts payable list and look at, you know, who your business-to-business relationships are. You can invite your sponsor leaders to do the same thing. You know, if they say, well, geez, I really, you know, I'm not sure who I can ask. Well, first of all, we want the C-level executives at the event, and we want them to bring their, you know, their leaders. And we want to bring the C-level, the owners, the founders, the, you know, the executives of any people they do business with. And that way, and I'll say the important and, when you create the expectation that guests are prepared to be generous, that's when you can raise more money.
Great. We've all, I want to talk to you for a moment here, Kathy, too, about, we had an interesting guest on one of our podcasts that was from up in the New York area, and they said there's been a real swing away from the weekend galas, and a lot of weeknight events now, a lot of noon hour events, a lot of breakfast events. What has your experience been, and for organizations that want to maybe hit the refresh button and try something new, how would you go about recommending they set up a weekday or weeknight event?
Well, I think it's a great idea because when you think about the folks that you want to attract to your event, many of them have commitments on the weekends, you know, family, you know, business, you know, travel, whatever. I think it's a great idea. Any night of the week could work. I would actually back engineer that, and I would have some of your core leaders actually call some of the key donors, bidders that come to your event year after year and say, you know, we want to hit the refresh button, and, you know, we'd like to switch this up to a weeknight. Here are the dates we're thinking. Are you available? Because the worst mistake you could do is just do this arbitrarily without checking in with your constituencies, and they can't come.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just kind of as a side note to that point, that's an exercise that I would say everyone needs to do every year. You know, gosh, I did an event one time where, you know, unbeknownst to me, we were in the hole over $100,000 before the tent flaps even opened. And that's because the previous year, you know, they had six very generous donors as leadership gifts for Fund a Need at the $25,000 level. Well, in this example, four of them weren't coming, and the group knew about it. And one of those donors spent $30,000 in the live auction. They weren't coming. There was no replacement donor. There was no effort to, you know, fill that void before the doors opened. So if that's a big hole to climb out of, knowing that the donors aren't there. You don't want that to happen if you switch from a weekday to a weeknight, or even if you stay on a weekend, you want to make sure you do that exercise every single opportunity.
Have you personally had experience with successful weeknight events? I know that's a crazy question.
Certainly, yeah. You
have. And how are they structured? How do you see them being structured to be most productive?
Well, it's a weeknight, so you got to move it. You know, there's no talking heads, there's no boring speeches. I think, you know, you want to have a short, I think it's valuable to have a shorter cocktail hour, get them in, have everything preset and move it. And many of my successful events, and you're probably finding this too, is that the fundraising is done before dinner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can do great live auction and Fund a Need if you have a short live amount of live items, you know, before you do dinner. And because the worst thing that could happen is if you do your fundraising, and I'll quote our good friend Renee Jones, great fundraising auctioneer. She quoted the term the golden hour. You know, the golden hour is the perfect magic time, and it's different for every group, when you should do, when you're going to maximize your live auction and your fund to need. If you wait too long, you're dead in the water. Mm-hmm. You know, and the worst, you know, as you know, Danny, the worst thing is, you know, people are, you know, they're too tired, they're spacing out, they're on their phones, they're driving home. It's too late if you wait till the end. I like to, if you have a handful of live items in your fund to need or just a fund to need alone, I like to do it right away. Build the case, build the emotion, and invite people to be generous.
All right. Now, certainly one of the things we're seeing really trending right now is the growth of what you've called the fund to need. It's also known as a paddle raise, a cash appeal. It goes by different names, but this very simply is where we're going to our supporters in the room at the event, and we're appealing to them for straight cash donations sometimes and sometimes not in exchange for a charitable tax receipt. What are some of your strategies for executing a successful fund to need?
Well, you know, I love fund to need. I think it's probably one of the most important things that's happened in my lifetime as far as helping engage donors and raise more money. And the reason is every single person can raise their bid card at a level that's meaningful for them. And when you, so some of the strategies are A, do the fund to need earlier than you ever believed before, because this is a chance for every single person to help out. To
before give. Or after the live auction?
It depends.
Okay.
You know, and I'm finding that I'm starting to do many of fund to need before the live auction.
Okay.
And I'm seeing some that I do in the middle. I think this is the value of working with a professional benefit auctioneer, especially someone with the BAS, Benefit Auctioneer Specialist Certification from the National Auctioneers Association, because, you know, Danny, you and I both have gone through that training, and when you have a professional auctioneer that understands, they can help counsel the group, because every year it's different, and that's the benefit. And so I would say, the next important thing, kind of on the heels of that, is retain a professional benefit auctioneer, someone who is skilled not only in conducting the fund to need, but also helping you design it, to plan it, because there is a cadence, a strategy, a timing for it. And
it can backfire. It can blow up and get very uncomfortable for your guests very quickly if it's in the hands of somebody who's not capable of executing a fund a need or fund an item. And maybe talk about that for a second, Kathy. You know, it's not easy to ask for money, is it?
Well,
it's easy for you.
The person who loves to ask for money. I do love to ask for money, and I love to teach other people to ask for money. So I wish I could find another phrase to say ask for money, because it's really not about asking for money. It's for someone, you know. So I'm gonna do 2 points. One is, yes, it can be very uncomfortable and sometimes unproductive or even a failure if you have someone who doesn't really understand how to invite your guests to be generous for a cause they dearly love. And so I think if someone is interested in making sure they have the right auctioneer, you can go to auctioneers.org and look up people who have the benefit auctioneer specialist, or you can contact Danny, you can contact me, we can help you, because we know many of the best auctioneers in the country. That being said, Danny, focus me on the second point I was going to say. I wanted to talk about the power of an auctioneer doing that, and then...
Yeah, just that they can blow up on you. They can get very uncomfortable. Asking for money isn't easy. It needs to be in the hands of somebody capable.
So I want to reframe the whole thing about asking for money. This is really important, and I think can be very valuable, because many people who are tasked with asking for money, the boards of directors, you know, some staff, some volunteers, they don't know how. But it's really not about asking for money. It's about connecting a donor to something they are impassioned about, whether it's working with animal rescue groups, whether it's helping people work their way through homelessness to find low-income housing and be successful, whether it's helping people who are ill and you're raising money for research. It's really about that deeper level of impact. So if you're tasked with the responsibility of raising money, flip it. Flip it for yourself and flip it for the donor and think about understanding why this particular person really cares about your cause, and then all you have to do is make that connection and then open the opportunity for them to give at a level that's meaningful for them. And when you can make that connection, as opposed to having the, I would call, an outdated model of asking for money, if you see yourself, it's, for me, it's such an honor to invite someone to give to something they care about. And that's when that paradigm, that mindset shift changes, it's actually easy and fun and one of the most rewarding things that anyone can ever do.
Well, I've got to agree with you, and as I said a few minutes ago, it's definitely a trend. If you are listening to this this podcast and your organization has not yet had a fund and eat or fund an item, you know, we always say you need to find something that's an emotional trigger, and definitely incorporate this into your fundraising event, because it's surprising how much money can come forward very quickly. I know I had an event where we raised $350,000 in 90 seconds. And that was all videotaped. Yeah. We had 35 people raise their hands at $10,000, and it happened in a minute and a half. And I know, Kathy, you've got lots of stories like that. And it blows my mind. You know, there's no way that evening when I walked into the room, I would have guessed there was that much money there. And I know you've been surprised countless times. And we always tell our clients, you know, you can never underestimate your audience nor their capacity to give. And this holds true for the fund and need. It holds true for the live auction. You know, so often we're talking to clients and recommending consignment packages like Winspire and other companies out there provide. And, you know, we get pushback, you know, organizations say, no, we don't want to go consignment. It's not pure donation. But sometimes they just short their thinking on things like this. And you've got to try these things. Give them a try. And very often you're surprised to see how well they work.
Danny, I want to come back to the fund and need for a sec, if I could.
Yeah.
You know, for many people, there may be many people on the podcast who don't understand the power of a fund and need, a fund the mission, a paddle raise. You know, and you mentioned in your example you had, an, you know, 10 people come in, you know, a number of people at a very high level. One of the other benefits of fund and need is you can have many levels so that everyone can find a place where they feel comfortable and participate. You know, many, you know, the most successful technique is to start high and invite people, anyone to give, making sure you have a leadership gift at least, you know, pre-secured at the first two levels. And then the auctioneer, in a very gracious way and in an inspiring way, invites everyone else to raise their bid card at that level, calling out those numbers. And you can go all the way down to $100. And because the skill of a true professional benefit auctioneer is that they make everyone feel the gratitude at any level. Because, you know, at a live auction, you know, you may have however many items you have, there's competitive bidding, and there's typically only one, sometimes you have two, you know, items. You know, and then it you know, with a competitive bidding situation with live auction, that means the vast majority of guests can't give anything. But when you add the fund a need, then it opens up the opportunity for every single person to give. And that's what I love so much. And that's why I created a master class for auctioneers in fund a need. And I'll be teaching that again. So, you know, I felt it was so important to really advance the profession and, you know, think about those high levels at which we can help our clients really raise more money.
You know, I've talked to two or three auctioneers that took your program, that master class, and I heard nothing but rave reviews, so I hope I'm on your list to attend the next one. I'd be glad to come down and take it, because we can all stand to be a little better educated. You know, I think the fund a need or fund an item is working so well right now, too, at this time in our history. When people are starting to downsize a lot, they're starting to simplify their lives, and I think a lot of people are, especially after having been through some of the tough economic times we've seen since the Great Recession here back in 08, 09. People are really starting to cut back on the amount of stuff they want in their lives. And they're bringing that mentality into these events lots of times. And sure, you still need to have the silent auction, live auction, but the fund in need or cash appeal works so well for people that already have enough stuff but still want to support the cause and give. So you've really hit it on the head here for us, Kathy.
Bingo.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I know that you're busy and you're getting ready for to consult with your clients. You're up there in Silicon Valley getting ready for a big wine auction, and that's one of the biggest events in the country every year.
Well, it's one of them. You know, there's a whole... you know, vintners, the wine industry, wine growers are some of the most charitable business owners in the world. And there's a whole genre of charity wine auctions that raise millions and millions of dollars each year. And, you know, I just have to give a personal shout out to, you know, some of the leaders I've worked with, you know, at the Sonoma Wine Auction, Silicon Valley Wine Auction, Cork and Barrel Wine Auction. You know, there's so many. You know, I just saw the other day that the Naples Wine Auction raised $15 million in one afternoon for charity.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah. You know, it's just, and it's phenomenal. And, of course, you know, with the live auction and fund a need, it's a home run.
Well, you see it and I see it, that it continues to be that one of the most profitable and highest ROI items that you can have in your auction is wine. There's lots of different ways to present it. You can have wine, you can have a wine tree, you can have it set up in your silent auction, you can do wine raffles. Let's talk for a second about consignment travel and where are the hot destinations that you're seeing right now. Kathy, what's moving for you at your auctions? What are people responding to as far as travel packages?
You know what? My hard and fast rule about any kind of auction item is that you must first and foremost match your audience. So I think the best consignment packages are the ones that are really customized to your own clients. And this is something, you know, as a nonprofit or if you're listening as an auctioneer, you can really help your auction committee figure out, you know, who are your guests? Where do they want to go? What kind of packages have been selling well in the past? And that's the benefit of working with a consignment company, because they have so many excellent opportunities that you can help tailor the experience year after year and be able to keep it fresh.
Mm-hmm. And be able to sell multiples. That's so important. That's what I love about selling the consignment packages.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's,
you know,
right.
And,
go ahead, Danny. No, I was going to say that, you know, one of the cool things about consignment items, you know, is that, you know, it's important to kind of keep it fresh and be able to offer some new things each year. And that's the value of working with a group that offers so many different opportunities. And, you know, I think the important thing about a consignment item is that you want to make sure you do your auction math and make sure it does match your audience so that you can actually raise funds from the particular item.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, I know you probably do the same, but our first recommendation to any of our clients looking at taking consignment packages is that they find an underwriter, somebody to underwrite the cost of that item, so then it can be treated as a pure donation at the auction for the organization.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, that's a win-win-win all the way around. And, you know, the person who is the underwriter, whether it's an individual, which, you know, I think it needs a hard look. There's many individual donors that want to, you know, give more. Or whether it's a corporate sponsor who underwrites it, they're going to be able to get extra recognition. And as you said, Danny, the folks that allows that consignment item to be a pure donation to the organization. So love that idea.
You know, it's funny, Kathy, you know, I've always enjoyed from the very first time that I met you and at one of our benefit auctioneer summits many years ago. I can't remember where we first, I think it was probably San Diego a long, long time ago, and then, of course, Chicago back in 2013. And whenever I get a chance to hear you speak at the summit, it's amazing. You can always hear a pin drop. You've just got the respect of all of us that are in this industry, and we just can't wait to hear what comes out of your mouth. And I've always looked at you as a bit of a psychologist. psychologist in this business. You've really drilled deep to understand the psychology of donors and the psychology of the nonprofits and all the rest of it. And, you know, I have a quick question. I had a situation here just last weekend doing an auction for a service club, and the tremendous pushback on taking a consignment package. They said, no, unless it's purely donated, we don't want it, even though they could make a profit of $4,000 or $5,000 or $6,000 on the package that I was recommending to them. They insisted on doing, instead of taking a consignment package, putting on a dinner at the executive director or fundraising chair's home for six people, three couples, and sold for $2,000. But when you look at the time, you know, they've got to probably go spend $500 or more on groceries and booze for the night. The time involved in inviting all those guests and, you know, the time having the event in your home, all the rest of it, whereas one phone call, it's so easy to get a consignment package where you can make so much more money. So how do you fight that kind of argument when you get that from your clients? You know, because when you look at the return off that $2,000 sale for the dinner in that person's home versus selling a consignment package where you might have made $4,000 or $5,000 profit and then been able to multiply that and sell that same package to the second high bidder, possibly the third high bidder. How do you deal with that psychology that just does not make any sense?
Well, you know, there are a handful of groups that just have a full, you know, they have a policy that they won't accept consignment items. First of all, I always want to know kind of the deeper reason. So, you know, I would say, you know, tell me more about where that idea is coming from. You know, and is it a hard and fast policy? Is there someone in the organization who's saying that? Are there a group of people? And I actually would love at that point to get those folks on the phone and listen deeply to some of their concerns, because they may not be founded in
the truth,
or they may not understand, you know, some of the benefits. And Danny, you just did a great job of kind of, you know, laying all that out. And I agree with you 100% there. This is my 32nd year of being a benefit auctioneer. I'm so excited about that. And, you know, I have, you know, over the years run into groups that say it's just a hard and fast policy and that's the way it is. And, you know, you do your best. But sometimes that's, you know, it could be, you know, someone who was the founder 10 years ago who's since retired and no one's had a chance to really reexamine that. And especially with, you know, like Winspire offers some beautiful packages. And, you know, when you think about it, especially in contrast to, you know, packages that you may not yield as much money, I think, you know, when you're looking about fundraising auctions, it's about how much are you going to yield. And, you know, how much it, and what is the labor intensity that may go into an item. So I'd really want to listen and have a heart-to-heart talk, you know, and help anyone understand that there is a great value. Now on the same thing, you wouldn't load up. You wouldn't have 100% of items that are all consignment. But to sprinkle them in, to use them where necessary, especially when it's predictable that you can raise more money, and you can have an underwriter, so 100% of the profits go to your, you know, to your bottom line and to the organization. It's fantastic. So, you know, no one's ever called me a psychologist before. That's pretty cool, Danny. But yeah. I would say, I think it, you know, a lot of our work is about listening and educating, and then of course, you know, it's up to our organization to make the decision. But at least you've opened the door in a positive way.
Great. Well, on that note, Kathy, we've used up our time here today, and we could certainly we could do two or three podcasts with you or more, and we hope that you'll come back and join us again as a guest on Events with Benefits. You're one of the leading fundraising auction strategists in the business, a professional auctioneer. Where can people that would like to follow up on this, where can they make contact with you?
Sure. I have a website. You can go to the website. It's called www.howtoraisemoremoney.com. That's www.howtoraisemoremoney.com.
And if she can't help you, go to DannyHooper.com. No, I take that back. I'm just joking you.
Well, I know that a lot of people listening may want to get some more information, and what this will do is it'll give you an opportunity. That'll get you on my mailing list, so you can receive my monthly newsletters, articles, you know, all of that.
And your newsletter, by the way, is excellent. I love your newsletter.
Well, thanks. And then I have. And I have a special gift for anyone that goes to howtoraisemoremoney.com. There's I think we have a complimentary little excerpt from my book, A Higher Bid. So that will get everybody started. And I can't thank you enough, Danny. You know, I have to just tell this tiny story. The first time I met Danny Hooper, it was the very first Benefit Auctioneer Summit of the National Auctioneers. We sat next to each other. We just happened to. And we struck up a great friendship, and I admire you. I love to hear you speak. You have so many great ideas, and I thank you for doing this podcast, along with Donation Match and Winspire. You know, together, we all elevate the profession and help people raise more money for their great causes.
Hear, hear. Kathy Kingston, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you at the next Benefit Auctioneer Summit.
Absolutely. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Kathy.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the show this week. For show notes, special offers, or to listen to previous episodes, you can visit us at eventswithbenefits.com. Please also consider subscribing to our podcast on iTunes. And if you enjoyed the show, do us a favor and write us a review while you're there. If you have any questions or feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email at hosts@eventswithbenefits.com. We'll see you next time.